Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we're learning Masechet Moed Katan. We find ourselves on Daf Yudchet Amud Bet, that's 18b. We're about six lines down from the top at the Mishnah. We are continuing on with a new topic related to Chol HaMoed. We've previously discussed the prohibition to cut one's hair or shave on Chol HaMoed and to launder one's clothing. Now we move on to the other topic, which is the topic of writing. I clearly remember in my childhood that kids would come in with notes from home on Chol HaMoed that they were not allowed to write, and so they were the week of Chol HaMoed supposed to sit in class without having to write. And that's what it says here. It gives a list. The Mishnah is going to give a list of things that can be written on Chol HaMoed, clearly implying that any other kind of writing, except for this necessary writing, is forbidden on Chol HaMoed. Now, the things that are permitted have to fall under certain categories that we've discussed in Chol HaMoed already, and there are four things to be considered. Most of the Rishonim think that all of the things that are listed in this Mishnah that are allowed to be written are things that are adavar ha'aved. That is, there is the possibility that a loss will be caused if these documents are not written. And so therefore, they should be written to forestall a possible catastrophic loss. In this regard, they may be considered to be litzora chamoed for the necessity of the moed itself, but that would be another category that the writing should be done for the sake of the holiday and not for the sake of something that happens after the holiday. In addition, the writing has to be not a maase uman. That is, generally speaking, most things that should be written, we'll see if this is the case or not, should not be something that is required an expert to write. So most of our kinds of writing, this doesn't talk about typing, which they didn't have, but most of our kinds of script writing may not count. That's why the Rama actually paskins, although it's not clear that obviously that everyone follows that. The Rama says in Tavkuf Memhei, V'nagu l'hakel b'chtav shelanu, we are mekil in our writing, she'enu ma'ase uman, which is not considered a ma'ase uman. That is casual writing, that we write a grocery list or even a letter is considered to be Maase Hedyot, and so it's possible that you could follow the Kula of the Rama to say that you could write it. And finally, it should be something that doesn't require so much Tircha. So let's see what kinds of things are permitted to be written, and we'll see they're mostly documents. Mishnah says, Ve'elu kotvim b'moed, these are the things that may be written on Chol HaMoed. Kiddushei Nashim, the betrothal contracts for women. Now, based on Rashi, and the assumption we'll have here is that we're talking about most of the time when we get engaged, like when we do it under a chuppah, we do it with a ring, and that is kesef and shava kesef. But it is also possible to engage a woman by contract. You can give a woman a contract that says, I would like to become betrothed to you, and that would be a shtar of kiddush hanashim. That is the assumption of Rashi, is what that means. And then on the other side of the marriage, well, if it doesn't work out, gittin, a divorce document. And that's an issue, I think. I didn't look into this, but most gittin are written with a maase uman, meaning gittin are written in stam. They're written in the same letters that it's the Torah and tefillin and mezuzahs are written in, which we'll discuss in the next Mishnah. Are you not allowed? But that may be a custom. Perhaps if you had to write a get on Chol HaMoed, you wouldn't have to write it. You'd write it as a maase hedyot, not as a maase uman. Okay, so we have engagement documents and divorce documents. Number three are shovarin, which are receipts for debts that are paid. Daitiki, which are wills, generally wills given by people who are close to death that dispose of their property. Matana is a gift given by a healthy or living person. To establish that it was given as a gift. That kind of document. Prusbolin are documents that are given to the court in order to protect property that can be sold to the court over a sabbatical year. Igarot Shum, letters of evaluation. Usually these refer to when a court has established that a person has to pay a debt from his property, and the court will send delegates down to the property to figure out the value of that property and how much property has to be sold, let's say, or given over in order to satisfy the debt. The Igarot Mazon, letters of support. This is either could be letters of child support for a father to a stepchild, or possibly a letter requiring a support for a husband to a wife, which reminds me before we go on that when we spoke about gittin before, generally speaking, we're not talking about a husband who actually wants to divorce his wife. What the Rishonim say here is you're talking about a husband who is planning to travel in a potentially dangerous situation and he has to leave on Chol HaMoed. So he will write a conditional divorce for his wife in case for some reason he disappears or he isn't able to come back from his journey and she's not sure if he's alive or dead. She would be a classical case of an aguna. So we're not dealing with normal divorces here where you would just wait until after the holiday, but in a situation where he has to leave, he might write a conditional divorce. Okay, shtare chalitza umeyunin, documents related to chalitza, which is the outcome of leveret marriage where a man's brother and his wife were married and didn't have any children, and the brother dies, so the other brothers have a responsibility to marry his widow and to have children with her to continue his brother's line. But if they decide they do not want to get married, if he decides he does not want to marry her, they perform the ritual of chalitza in which he rejects her and she rejects him. Miun is a situation where a marriage was arranged when a girl was a minor, and when she gets old enough to actually marry, it was usually set up by her older brother or by her father. She has the right, when she achieves her majority, to do miun, which is a rejection of the husband who was set up, and she doesn't have to marry him. So there's also a document related to the miun that shows that she rejects the shidduch. Ushtare berurin. Ushtare berurin can mean either a shtar that establishes in an inheritance case which parts of property go to which brothers, let's say, it's a mivarer, which sections of the property belong to each brother, or it could possibly be related to some other way in a court proceedings where you have to identify judges. There was another example as well. And then Gzeirot Beitin are the Piskei Din, the final decisions of any court of law. The court of law, generally speaking, wouldn't meet on Chol HaMoed, but if for some reason there was a decision of the court that had to be written down, it could be written on Chol HaMoed. The Igrot Shel Rashut, and letters of Rashut. I saw three different interpretations of Igrot Shel Rashut. One, which is one that Rashi brings, are official letters from the government. I mean, that is from the non-Jewish government. So official correspondence, if it had to be copied from the non-Jewish government, could be copied on Chol HaMoed. The Nimuka Yosef says it's the reshut of the Jewish people, meaning it comes from the Av Beit Din or the Nasi or from the High Court in Yerushalayim, that they might write letters letters of affirmation, like that a person can be a shochet or the person that can be a dayan, so they give him his bona fides, and these are documents that can be written on Chol HaMoed. And finally, the opinion of the Rif, which is not mentioned here in the Bavli, but in the Yerushalmi it mentions what's called a she'ilat shalom, that is social letters, letters that you write to your friend. So in this case, Reshut would mean things that are not done for any specific legal or mitzvah purpose, but voluntary letters that you write to your friends, social letters. And according to that, the Mishnah would say that those are allowed to be written, certainly at least under certain conditions, according to our Mishnah. So all of those examples are sort of semi-official documents, maybe written on Chol HaMoed, with the exception possibly of Shilat Rashut. But it seems to imply that in general, writing would not be permitted unless there was some specific reason to allow it. Now, our Gemara is going to primarily deal with only one of these cases, which is the case of Kiddushei Nashim. And the question is whether or not are you permitted to get engaged on Chol HaMoed. We'll see, and it's clear that you're not allowed to get married on Chol HaMoed. The question is, can you get engaged? So the Gemara begins. Amar Shmuel. Shmuel said, Mutar le'areis eshet isha b'chulo shel moed. It is permitted to become betrothed or to get engaged to a woman on Chol HaMoed. Shema yikadmenu acher, lest someone else beat you to it. In other words, there's a single woman, she's available to be presented with a marriage proposal. If you can't do it on Chol HaMoed, And then you have to wait until after Yontif, perhaps you'll be delayed, and some other suitable bachelor will propose to her, and he will lose that opportunity. Since we don't want him to lose that opportunity, we allow him to propose on Chol HaMoed itself. So the question is this true? So Gemara says, Lema misayei alei, let us say that a support for this statement of Shmuel, that you can get engaged, comes from our Mishnah. Ve'elu kotvin ba'moed, these are the things that can be written on the moed, kiddushei nashim. So it says specifically that a betrothal document can be written on Chol HaMoed. That would sound like you can write the betrothal document and then use it to get engaged. That's what it sounds like. So Gemara says, my love, shtari kiddushin mamish, this is not really actually a document of betrothal. Lo, it's not. It is actually shtari pisikta. It is a shtar that establishes monetary considerations. And as we'll explain, uchad Rav Gidel, and this is like Rav Gidel, Amar Rav, who said in the name of Rav, da Amar Rav Gidel Amar Rav, Kama atan dontein levincha, that you ask one set of parents, how much are you giving to your son? Kach v'kach, this much and this much. Kama atan dontein levincha, and then you ask the other set of parents, how much are you giving to your daughter? Kach v'kach, this much and this much. Amdu v'kitchu, then they stand up and get engaged. Kanu, and they acquire the obligation to pay the amount that they specified. Hein hein ha-dvarim ha-niknin ba-amira. These are matters that are acquired by their amira. In other words, each set of parents makes a verbal declaration that they are going to give a certain amount. And although that amount doesn't exist yet because they haven't officially got engaged, when he then does a ma'ase kinyan, he does an actual act of betrothal, he gives her a ring or a contract or whatever it is, and they become engaged, immediately then the amount that the parents agree to, you know, the flops or whatever it is that they agree to, the Mishnah Berurah calls this the same as what we call tanaim. The Tanaim go into effect. We do it a little differently. When people write Tanaim nowadays, we have a document that we sign at the Chasan's Tish, at the wedding. But here, the idea would be that and that is prior to the engagement, in fact, because the engagement doesn't happen until actually the Chuppah. But in a situation where things were as they were originally set up, which is that you would get engaged, officially engaged, sometime before the wedding, as soon as the engagement kinyan happened, you already had an agreement by the two sets of parents as to how much they would pay for the wedding, or how much they were giving to the young couple. The difference is that this shtar pesikta is an informal document that writes down the amount that they agree to each other. It's not a formal document, it's just a way of remembering it. So what the argument here that the Gemara is making is that when it says kiddushei nashim, it's only referring to this informal document reminding us how much the parents will have to pay. That is not going to happen on Chol HaMoed. It could easily happen afterwards. It's only a reminder for when the betrothal takes place, and therefore it cannot be used as a support for Shmuel's position that it's possible to get married, that it's possible to get engaged on Chol HaMoed. So we try again, a different proof. Lema misayei alei, perhaps we can prove Shmuel's point from another place, which is another Mishnah. On Chet Amud Bet in Moed Katan, we had it earlier. Ein nosim nashim b'moed, you may not get married, you may not marry a woman on Chol HaMoed. Lo betulot, not if she's never been married before. Velo amonot, and not widows. Velo miyabin, you may not do yibum on Chol HaMoed. Mipnei shesimcha hilo, because it is too much simcha. In other words, we have a principle, it's what Hadini Mikra Yosef says, that ein ma'arvin simcha b'simcha, we don't mix simchas. And in particular, on Chol HaMoed, it is the simcha of the Jewish people. And so you shouldn't be doing something which is very particularly your own private personal simcha on the holiday of the Jewish people. So perhaps we can derive from here that although you're not allowed to marry on Chol HaMoed, ha le'areis, but to get engaged, to become betrothed, sharei, is permitted. Perhaps we could say that because it says specifically you can't get married, but maybe you can get engaged. After all, getting married is more serious. That you can't do on Chol HaMoed, but perhaps the simcha of getting engaged is not as great as the simcha of getting married. So Gemara answers, no, you can't read it that way. Lo mi baya ka'amar. It's really, you have to read it the other way. It's a lo mi bai. Not just can you get not get married, you also can't engage. Lo mi bai le areis. I don't even have to say that you don't have to get engaged. Deloka avid mitzvah. After all, getting engaged is not really a mitzvah. It's just preparatory to a mitzvah. Ella afilu lisa. But even to get married, nami also you cannot do. Deka avid mitzvah asor. And even in the case of getting married, which is a mitzvah, you can't get married. So then I learned kind of a kal vachomer backwards. If I can't even get married when I'm doing a mitzvah, for sure I can't get engaged when I'm not even doing a mitzvah. So both attempts to prove Shmuel's opinion so far have been inconclusive. So we have a third attempt to prove Shmuel's opinion, and this one is dispositive. Tashma, come and learn. The Tana de Shmuel. We have a teaching from the Academy of Shmuel. Me'arsin, one may get engaged. Aval lo konsin, but not get married. Ve'ein osin se'udat erusin. And in addition, even though you're permitted to get engaged, you are not permitted to make an engagement feast. You cannot have a special su'uda. Ve'lo miyabnin, and you also may not do a yibum. Mivnesha simcha hilo, because that is too much simcha for the holiday. Shema mina, learn from this. So this source is unambiguous that it does allow, or it says, it also probably explains the correct way of reading the Mishnah on Cheremun Aleph, which is that one may get engaged, just not married. Married is a huge simcha, engaged is not as big a simcha, and it is permitted. So that seems to be the final conclusion, and the truth is that the Shulchan Aruch paskins both ways. He paskins in Tafkuf Memhei, Sifhei, Mutar Lichtov Shtar Kiddushin, it's permitted to write a document of Kiddushin, that is an actual document that you'll get engaged with, a shtar. V'shitre psikta, and you can also write these informal documents that are like tanaim. So basically, you're allowed to do both. So at the end of the day, the Gemara seems to accept both explanations. The original explanation that what we mean by Kiddushin Nashim is an actual shtar that you get engaged with, and also the attempt to get rid of Shmuel or to counter Shmuel by saying that it was just a shtar psikta. Shulchan Aruch paskins that both are permitted to be written on Chol HaMoed. Okay, we'll go just a little farther. We're going to begin a more agadic questioning of Shmuel. Umi amar Shmuel shema yikad menu acher. Is it really true that Shmuel would say that the reason that you can engage on Chol HaMoed is because someone else might beat you to the punch, that someone might ask her to marry you before you can, and so we don't want to make you wait? V'hamar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, we have a different teaching of Rav Yehuda, the name of Shmuel, that says, V'chol yom v'yom, every day, bat kol yotzeit, a heavenly voice goes forth, v'omeret, and it says, bat ploni leploni, this woman is for this man, sadeh ploni leploni, and this field is for this field of this person is going to go to this person. So in which case, and you know, there are other versions of this teaching. There's one found in Sanhedrin and one found in Sota, where it says that even before the person is born, 40 days before the baby is born, a heavenly voice goes out and tells you who's going to be your bashert. So the point is, if you have a basher, why are you so worried that someone is going to beat you to the punch? After all, if it's meant to be from Hashem, then you'll just wait till after Yontif and you'll get engaged to your bashert. So the Gemara accepts this argument in here, and it says, Ella, rather, Shema yikadmenu acher berachamim, lest one beat you to the punch in prayer. That perhaps the person is going to daven, that they should be able to get engaged to the woman who is your basher, the woman who you're planning to get engaged to. And the question then that we'll have to discuss is, will Hashem listen to this prayer or not? But we actually already went further than I intended to go in this recording, so we're going to stop there, and we will continue with this story of whether or not someone else can marry your basher in our next recording. Have a wonderful day.